Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Hope's here.
Hello.
And we are joined for this discussion by the full Michael Tulemist himself. It's Mike Tulem.
Hey, fellas, what's up?
Not a whole lot. We are here today to have our monthly show discussion. This time, it is one of the most heavily requested shows. I think the minute I announced we were even thinking about doing like single series discussions. Mm-hmm. This was like, oh, you got to do Brotherhood. Because people have been hounding me to watch this since it came out. Mm-hmm. When it came out, I was nonplussed. I watched the first episode and said, shrug. Because it just hadn't been that long since the 2003 one.
Yeah, very short. I mean, what, the time like jump, 5 years?
Yeah, like 5 years.
So less than that for like a lot of Western fans.
Well, 5 years for Japan, way less than that for us, mm-hmm. because we certainly didn't get the first show in 2003, yeah. and this show was closer. Like, during that period, anime releasing in the U.S. was speeding up to catch up with Japan, you know, pretty quickly. So the time in between these two versions of the show for us was shorter than it was in Japan, but I never got to it, and, like, constantly people bothered me, like, when are you going to watch Brotherhood? Thoughts on Brotherhood? Have you started watching Brotherhood? It's like, so I finally watched Brotherhood for this podcast.
I didn't realize it was such an in-demand thing. That's interesting.
Who knew, right? I mean, I guess it's just, the fans of this show are really, really passionate.
They're super vocal.
Yeah, they're very vocal, they're very passionate about it, and people love to discuss which one is better. 2003, or this one, which we will do. But first, before we get started with that, I want to do what we always do at the top of these shows, and I want to know your experience with the show going into it, you know, where you were at with Anime Phantom at the time, and like, what was your experience personally with Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood? And Mike, why don't we start with you?
Well, my experience with the franchise as a whole began in, I think it was 2006, when I had kind of missed the whole phenomenon. I didn't have cable when it was on Toonami and Adult Swim, and it was on Adult Swim, right? That was where it aired.
Yes.
Yeah. By then, my cable subscription had lapsed. I ended up getting a membership to Columbia House, if anyone remembers that.
Yeah.
You pay a penny and they give you 11 DVDs. Only you have to pay $90 for the next three.
Mm-hmm.
Someone on one of the DVD discount boards discovered a way to game that system, and effectively it meant that you could get about 15 discs for $33.
Wow.
So I did that, and that's how I got the entire series. And I just watched it in huge, huge chunks as soon as the DVDs came in. And really, really loved it. It was a great, great show. And when Brotherhood was announced, I too was nonplussed, but I knew that the manga plot and the original TV series plot had a great divergence. So it was like, okay, fine, let's roll with this and see what they do. That thing was Brotherhood was appointment TV for me, man. I would watch that as soon as Funimation would put it up, and just kind of plow through the whole series like that. So it definitely created in me this sense of excitement, especially once it got to the point where it branched off from the original anime.
So were you watching it week to week?
Yes.
Okay. And and Hope?
Well, when Brotherhood was announced, I was intrigued because I liked both the 2003 anime and the manga, but the manga hadn't finished yet when it was announced. And it really hadn't finished, like, they hadn't finished publishing Viz. They were in the mid-teens somewhere, I think, when it was announced. And I was still collecting them, still reading them. So I was intrigued. I was excited because I liked the manga. I didn't like it as much as the anime adaptation, but I was interested in, for most part, interested in seeing fight scenes animated because that was, most of the 2003 show is, like, philosophies and character development and people talking and politics and stuff like that. And the Brotherhood is more, like, wacky, crazy monster fights. And so I was interested in seeing that stuff animated. And then when the actual show came out, I watched the, I guess, fan subs. It was before simulcast, so it must have been fan subs. I watched fan subs of the first several episodes, and my heart just sank into my stomach.
Yeah, that was simulcast from the beginning.
Oh, it was? Well, it must have been simulcast then, because all I know was I was reading, it was watching it subtitled roughly around the time it came out, because it was discussing it episode to episode in ANN's forums, actually.
Yeah, it was not same-day simulcast. As I recall, the simulcasts were about 2 or 3 days behind.
Okay, well, I watched it somehow. I didn't download it, so I guess it was off there. I don't even remember. It was such a long time ago. So, point being, like, I watched it pretty much as it came out at the beginning, and then I really lost. I think at episode 4, at the Tucker episode, I said, "Nope, no more. I can't take this. This is terrible. I hate it." And I stopped. But that original series, I should clarify, like 2003 anime. I liked the manga. I was reading it. I enjoyed it. But the 2003 anime was my favorite. Probably still is my favorite anime. And it's had, I think, the greatest, like, as far as like community fandom, interacting with other fans, sharing it with other people who don't know anything about anime, and you just enjoy the story together. Like, that's been the biggest impact show of my life, I guess, as far as anime goes. So it was, you know, so I had a very, very deep attachment to that. I was really excited for Brotherhood and optimistic, but I gave up very early on. And then I caught the whole thing later. Like, it was years after it had come out. I watched it all in English. For this podcast, I revisited in Japanese, so now I've seen it in both languages.
Okay. I kind of mentioned sort of my experience with the show, but I should point out that I was the Full Metal Alchemist guy at Anime Insider when I worked there. That show was the hottest kind of cool back then. That was, you know, on the cover of every other issue, and I was constantly writing giant articles about it. The 2003 show I spent a lot of time with. And to wit, if you own that show, my name's probably on the box somewhere.
I believe it is.
They really loved, Funimation really loved that quote that I gave them for it. So I lived inside of 2003 for many years, like at least 2 years. And, you know, by the time I was done with it, I was kind of Full Metal Alchemisted out. I was at TAFF, Tokyo Anime Festival, when they announced Brotherhood, and they had the big gate and everything there. And I found myself strangely non-excited. I was like, you're just going to start over again? Like, huh? That really took the wind out of its sails. It was too soon for a remake. It felt like it then. Kind of feels like it still.
Well, now that's the one that apparently a lot of people are seeing for the first time.
Yeah, I don't think the 2003 one gets play anymore. The one that that reruns is Brotherhood. The one that people can find on the shelves is Brotherhood.
And yet I still feel like not as many people have seen it.
Yeah, it still
feels... It's a weird contrast.
It's weird.
People starting with that franchise watch Brotherhood first now, but the number of people who have seen that still seems to be dwarfed by the number of people who saw the original, which is such a weird contrast.
Well, the original, 2003 Full Metal Alchemist, we can't downplay how big a hit it was.
It was huge.
That show was huge.
I remember all those American Anime Awards it won.
Yeah, right. I mean, not just any show wins those.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
In fact, it might be the record holder, considering that was the only time that ceremony was ever held.
Yes.
Yeah, it was unique in its timing. It really hit at the perfect time for it. It was in serious ascendancy in Japan, and the fandom outside of Japan also was ready for something like it.
Yeah, I think people were kind of ready for a shonen action series that was a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit more grown up than, you know, Naruto. Which was, you know, around the same time, maybe a year or two prior. So, I mean, it's hard to think about Naruto being, you know, as old as FMA 2003, but yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
They were contemporaries. Yep. Yeah.
Obviously I watched the entire show for the first time for this podcast. I watched it in Japanese with subtitles. I did not watch the English dub. I know people love the English dub. I didn't watch it that way. Also, when the show slowed down, you know, my Blu-ray player has a 1.5 speed setting, and all you have to do is pay attention, and you can get through some of these episodes a little bit faster. I didn't watch the whole show that way, but there were big pockets of slowness in this show, so that's kind of how I watched it.
Interesting. It's not how I remember it.
Really? Well, we'll get to it.
It's very cold at Briggs.
So
cold and slow.
Well, I mean, I think this may be one of those. Your experience is going to feel different if you're watching it a half hour a week versus 10 episodes in a sitting.
Yeah, you're right. I don't I do not deny that. Of course your experience is going to be different, especially with a show this long, mm-hmm. where you have I had 64 of them to get
64 through. Episodes in what, 2 weeks?
And well, no, I started in December and finished 2 or 3 days ago, so I gave myself a good month and a half on this one. Which is, you know, 4 or 5 episodes every day or every other day or something like that. Anyway, so let's just start at the beginning here, at the beginning of the show. So the first 13 episodes of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood are controversial, and people often tell you that you can skip them because they cover the same ground. That's the section of material that's identical to the 2003 show, except it's not.
Not accurate at all.
Except it's not identical. You still have to watch it, even though it's rushed. Mm-hmm. And like there's enough differences. It sets up so much going down the road that you still have to sit through these episodes, even though it is largely the same story material that you remember from the previous show.
The differences are very important, and they establish, like, this is a different world and worldview, and the characters are not quite the same. It's just, it's like two different people telling an event from two different perspectives, and it's like, you can't just take half of one person's retelling and then jump into the other one, and there's going to be stuff that doesn't match.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I'm going to come right out and say I really enjoyed both shows a lot. I don't think there's a lot of difference in quality between the two of them, personally. And I still had no problem watching that 13 episodes of Brotherhood. That, you know, that didn't feel stale or weird to me or like a do-over. You know, I was okay with it.
Right. But in these episodes, just to get to the sort of the material that it covers, for people who either haven't seen it, or I hope you're not listening to this if you haven't seen it and want to and don't want to be spoiled, because we will be spoiling the entire
thing. Oh, God, yeah. Bail now.
It's the basic introduction. It opens in Meteorez, so you get like a battle in Central, which is where the, you know, alchemy headquarters are. The state alchemist's headquarters are there. And they're fighting what's his butt.
Oh, he's not important.
Some guy. They're fighting some guy.
He's an ice alchemist that they made up.
Yeah, they threw it in
Isaac.
So they threw it in there just to have like
to have a new character.
Well, big flashy battles right at the start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So right away you're getting all these big flashy battles. Then it goes into standard ass Full Metal Alchemist, which is you're introduced to the characters. They have the Show Tucker episode, which is really, really important to the show, like as a whole. Or at least it was in the 2003 version. that important.
Tucker is an incredibly different character in these two versions.
They try to make it important, as in it's a pressure point for Ed of a, I have nightmares about this. It really upset me. It taught me that alchemists can be evil, but it isn't. Apart from that, that is its entire significance, is Ed has nightmares about it and it makes him sad. Like, it doesn't have the huge resonance that it had for the other adaptation, which is fine, but that's just how it's treated.
Yeah, it's over in an episode, and at the end of it, Scar just shows up and kills him, which is a big change from the 2003 show, where he's there for most of the show. Mm-hmm. In fact, most of the evil doings in the first series, he's part of it, or he shows up at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. he's like this continual, like, out in the south, there's a bug that lives in the crops called a chigger. It's a weird little bug that's like really small, and it'll like, you'll walk by and it'll get into one of your pores, and it'll decide it's going to live in your pores, and you won't even notice it. You'll think it's a mosquito bite. You'll scratch at it. It's really a bug living inside one of your pores. That's what Tucker's role is. Like, all the big evil stuff, everybody pays attention to the big evil people, and really the problem is this tiny, unassuming evil that keeps jumping from side to side to side. Like, all the different sides are completely unrelated to one another, but he's always there. He's like the understated evil that everybody ignores.
Right, which is thematically important for that show.
Mm-hmm.
And in Brotherhood, that is not the case, and they just kind of off him, and it's sort of, isn't it horrible that he's a horrible monster?
Yes, it is.
It's also, It's also really obvious from the outset that he's evil, and they don't do that in the 2003 show.
No, he's
just a bad guy right away.
Yeah, he's a very
in the original story.
Fellow.
He's an interesting character for Scar to kill. You know that you know in Hiromu Arakawa's narrative, it was about establishing Scar as a serial killer. You know,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. Which ultimately, I don't think the show. I don't think the show does. I don't think. I think Scar is one of the most damaged characters in Brotherhood in that transition. Mm-hmm. I think his character in Brotherhood is very much compromised from what they did with it in the 03 version. But from the outset here, maybe we are comparing a little too much right from the get-go. Right. Let's just talk about this show. Mm-hmm. So even having, 10 years displaced from the 2003 version, I still felt like those first 13, they were blowing through story. Like, getting through it as fast as possible. And you can tell, because the minute Izumi shows up, their master, and they're fighting Greed down in the sewers... Greed being one of the homunculi that is birthed by Father, who's the big bad guy. Then the story suddenly slows way down. Yeah. It's like it was on fast forward before, and someone just hit play, and suddenly everything slows way down, and they're taking their time with these plot developments because that's when I assume the manga starts to heavily diverge from what was in the original show.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Mike, did you notice that when you were watching?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could tell that the director was trying to get through that material quickly because he knew that the viewership was going to be familiar with it.
Right. I am firmly of the stance that I feel like Brotherhood would have been a stronger show. And I hate to say this because the length really started to kill me towards the end. It would have been a stronger show if they had ignored the 2003 show's existence completely and just made a straight adaptation of the whole thing.
So it would have been a 72 or 75 episode show then.
I think I go further than that to say that I do not understand. I know they exist. I know they exist in large quantities and will probably respond to this, but I do not understand people who came into this adaptation of the story without having read the manga or seen the original show, just like this was their first experience with the story. I don't understand why they stuck with it because to me, like those first 13 episodes are so bad and toneless and weird. And then this happened and then this happened and then this happened without any like exploration of the emotions at all. It just, I can't imagine anybody sitting through it and not being like, well, this sucks. But there were people that did. So, I mean, I think for the most part, it's manga fans, but I think it's mostly manga fans, but I know that there's people that did that. I can't imagine it. It would frustrate
me. I mean, it's important to emphasize that the Brotherhood was not just a change in tone. It was also a change in style, in visual style. The first series characters had this kind of polished, lean, realistic look. Brotherhood was just this more stylized, pure action-looking characters.
They were more blobby. They're more blobby. They have or puppy faces, I like to call them.
Yeah. There's more smashing and smearing going on in the fight.
Yeah, there's a lot more kinetic. There's a lot more kinetic energy. There's a lot more. You can sort of smack them against a wall, and there's like a nice airy spray. It looks like there's like a little film of dirt all over everything, and not in a gross way, but in an idyllic, painterly kind of way.
Yeah, it's a people there kind of way.
Yeah, it's more in her style. While the 2003 adaptation was much more adapted for like. I don't know, like giving it a feeling of like a rustic world with like people that have like thick bones and impacts that hurt and stuff like that. This was more comic booky. There you go.
Yeah,
for sure. I think and the stuff you're talking about, the squash and stretch in the fights, is where I thought the animation really came to life and when I was most visually compelled. By this version in particular, I think that is the one thing it has over the 2003 version is the crazy animation that happens in some of the fight scenes.
Yeah,
and we'll get to some examples here. But so the whole thing slows down, and this is when the show introduces its Eastern characters from the nation of Xing.
Xing, yeah.
It's spelled with an X.
Somewhere between a J and a Z.
It's a Chinese thing.
Okay. Yeah. It introduces, Ling? And Mei Chang, right?
Yes, Ling Mei Chang.
And these turn out to be important characters, not only thematically, but just narratively. They're very important characters for the rest of the show. And you spend a lot of time with them, like it or lump it, throughout the show. But importantly, they introduce one of the major thematic differences that the 2003 show I don't think ever touched on, but this show very heavily talks about, which is the idea that Western alchemy is corrupt and evil and is built on the corpses of millions.
Literally.
Eastern alchemy is more Shinto-y and is in tune with the movements of the tectonic plates of the earth or something. And that's where they draw their power from, the natural power of the natural energy that the earth gives off.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and so the combination of these two will create a perfect version of alchemy that doesn't require any human sacrifice.
It's important to note, it's very important to note that the mechanics of alchemy and what it means to the theme of the show are so different between the 2003 version of Brotherhood. Like, you almost can't really talk about, like, events without delving into, okay, alchemy, the way alchemy works is just completely different. Like, in the 2003 show, it's kind of spoilery, but it's using the energy from souls of dead people from another dimension, specifically ours, and that's it. And it's not good, it's not evil, it's just the way it works. It's just, hey, here's what happens when you die: you become the energy for alchemy committed in Fullmetal Alchemist. That was its thesis. And Brotherhood is not that. It is your soul is connected to the souls of all other things on the planet and the planet itself. Eastern alchemy connects your soul to the earth, and that's good. Western alchemy connects your soul to the destroyed souls of others that are currently being literally piped through the earth right now. And
there's plumbing for them.
And it's like, one is good, one is evil. And I think that really, really says a lot to, like, the goals and worldview of the two shows being completely different, which is to say, FMA Brotherhood has a very... yeah, humanity and boo, evil darkness of the things that aren't human and bad and evil. Like, it is very gung-ho, heroic, comic booky, good versus evil stuff.
Well, I don't know. I think both shows are really good at portraying large-scale violence as a symptom of bad social systems.
I don't think so. I disagree with that, but, like... because in Brotherhood, it is caused by all the evil in the world is caused by literally a ball of evil. But, like, on a very, very, like, large scale comparison, Brotherhood is mostly about really good people versus really evil forces, like the seven deadly sins and Father and everything. And even people that you don't agree with, like the different races and religions, like the Shing characters and Ishbal and the central characters and atheists and believers and stuff like that, can all get together under this big banner of humanity and be, we are good. This black force of blackness is evil. The 2003 Fullmetal Alchemist was not like that. Alchemy is neither good nor evil. The people, individuals are neither good nor evil. Their perspectives will clash. You will not get along with people even though they are good. Like, two good people cannot get along. Two evil people can often not get along. It was moral ambiguity writ large. There is an episode, I think it's the very end of the original show, where in the same episode, Ed sort of succumbs and prays for the first time in his life before he dies. It's not permanent because fantasy, but, like, he says, if there's a god, I want there to be a god right now, and prays. In the same moment that, like, a scene later, Mustang says out loud, there's no such thing as God. And it's intentional. Like, it's like, this is how we're addressing this. There is no answer. Here's just how these people live their lives. So, anyway, the big, long turnaround to basically saying these two shows aren't just different plot event-wise. They're different, like, thematically, just divorced. And, you know, that's, I guess, a good way to look at it.
Right. It's a big, interesting change to me, and at least it gave me something new to chew on and think about while I was watching Brotherhood, because, you know, that's the kind of thing I really like to think about when I'm watching something. And to its credit, like people saying, oh, if you've seen 2003, you don't need to see Brotherhood. Well, it does introduce a completely different theme that carries the entire show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting to see. I was interested to see how they were gonna draw that out. I am... really fascinated by the fact that no one to my knowledge, that I was able to find accused Fullmetal Alchemist of being an Eastern supremacy story, because it's very much framed that way. Obviously, I don't think that was the intent, but I'm a little surprised. No, I really haven't seen criticism like that, where, well, in the East, they're in tune with the Earth, but the West is just about destruction.
Right, but they got that from a Western guy. Like, it's which direction did Hohenheim go and which direction did Father go? It has nothing to do with the societal bases of... you were just fooled by this bad person, you know.
It didn't strike me as really having much of a political commentary, you know, a good evil commentary about Jing. Well, Jing itself was in a war of succession.
Mm-hmm. My point was not that I think that should exist. Mm-hmm. My point was that the show, the language the show uses, and on a very surface level, you could make that reading. Mm-hmm. And I'm just surprised I haven't seen it. I guess people. We're smarter than that.
I think the biggest divide there is that the Xing characters are so very Chinese. It's not even Eastern like Japanese, but it's this is her like saying this is China, so it becomes more nebulous. I think.
Yeah, I don't think those themes are in there. I'm just saying I think right. You could read it that way easily, and usually that's the kind of thing people respond really strongly to. And I'm surprised I didn't see any reaction like that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, So we're introduced to these Chinese people, and then we get to the big event that presumably drove a huge amount of people to tears in the original show, and is treated very oddly in Brotherhood, and that is the death of Maes Hughes, everyone's favorite character from the 2003 show.
Not me.
No, not you.
I think he was my favorite when I first saw it.
So this is one of the biggest events in the story. At least it is in the 2003 version. Here, I was a little weirded out by the treatment of it, because Hughes has all of maybe 10 minutes of screen time before he gets capped.
Yeah.
And
you're pretty clear. You know, they very clearly assume that you know who he is and why he's important. Even though he makes that phone call, his reasons for doing it are totally different.
You're right. Exactly. And I felt like Brotherhood... it was leaning really hard on assuming, like you said, that you knew that character, because the amount of time spent grieving him mm-hmm. is way longer than they ever showed him on screen or gave you time to get attached to him as a character. So I was a little weirded out by it, because people are crying and remembering him, and all of his flashbacks have to use all of his scenes.
Yeah, because
there's almost none of them. So it struck me as being really weird. Mike, what did you think of the difference in approach to that character?
Well, like I said, I mean, I don't know. It didn't make that much of an impression on me, because I, you know, just a couple of years prior, I had shotgunned the entire original series. I knew who he was and I knew what he was about. I never got attached to him as a character. I thought in the original his death was telegraphed enough that it didn't particularly surprise me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just like, oh, okay, well, now that's out of the way and we can continue.
Okay, so you were basically just on board with what they were doing. It's like,
understood what they were doing and it didn't bother me.
So it was like, all right, let's get to the new material, basically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I wasn't inspecting the package looking for flaws. I was just like, all right, unwrap it, let's go.
The funny thing about that is that if you, from the outside, if you say you watch 2003 and then you watch Brotherhood, the assumption that you might make is that, oh, well, they just sped up, they cut out all the screen time and stuff like that because they assumed that people had seen the old show and, really they're adapting from the manga, where I'm sure he was explored more too. That's not accurate. In the manga, Hughes also has no screen time before he's killed. But he is also grieved heavily for chapters and chapters and chapters after that in the manga. So they're just faithfully adapting the source there. That really wasn't rushed. Brotherhood has more appearances of Hughes than the comics do, because the first episode has a lot of Hughes in it, and then after that... And the train sequence, which is not in Brotherhood, the train sequence in the manga does not have Hughes in it. So they didn't take anything out. All of his screen time in that show is more than what was in the comics. So what happened there was actually Hughes' death was not really a big deal in the comics. He doesn't even get a last word. He's kind of killed off camera. Like he goes to the phone, he gets shot, and then you see his corpse later, but he doesn't get the last words. He doesn't get a sad send-off. It's nothing like that at all. He was not a big deal in the comics, period. But he's mourned heavily afterward, because the show was being adapted at that time. And the show, people watched that show and they had such a deep, passionate reaction to Hughes' death, because in the 2003 version, he is deeply developed and we spend a lot of time with him before that happens. So Hiromu Arakawa, still making those comics, put that into her comic. And she has admitted this in an interview. She was like, oh, yeah, this was not supposed to be a big deal, but because people have these emotions attached to the TV show, which I was not intending for this character, I put more of him in there when we go back to Ishbal, like, 10 years ago, or whatever. Like, I wrote the comics so people were mourning him more heavily because I knew people had seen this show, and I felt like I had to. Like, that was the way that it went. So it's a weird... basically, 2003 is responsible for all the weird, why is everybody making a big deal out of Hughes? He was not in the story, so, you know, weird.
That is a bizarre case of, like, adaptation impacting the original as it's being written, which impacts the adaptation...
of the original.
Yeah.
That's it's super related. Fucking weird.
That's extremely interesting, because they give Hughes that same moment as he's fighting Lust in Brotherhood, where he has that great line about just, like, that's not, you know, you're not Maria.
Yeah. Well, he does say that in the comics, but then she goes, is this a better face? And he goes, oh, my God. And then he gets cut off. And then... yeah, you don't see it. You just see his body later. Not even his face. It's just his body from the waist down, laying in the phone booth. Again, not a big deal. so it's a weird situation.
Okay, so we get past that, and this is where sort of the meat of the show starts to... the meat of the show's core story, which I feel Brotherhood is way more focused on. This is where the focus is, rather than... what the 2003 show was doing. So they introduced the concept of Xerxes, which are these ruins that was an ancient society or whatever, and this is sort of the beginning of the problems that the world currently has, where there's an alchemist, his slave apprentice was Ed's dad.
Mm-hmm.
He has a little smiling monster rancher people. Guy in a jar. Yeah, well...
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so...
It's a classic homunculus, yeah.
Yeah, and so he has this thing, it desires power and basically tricks the king into allowing him to turn the entire place into a big transmutation circle and gets himself a body.
Mm-hmm.
And the king wanted
eternal life, and the little ball of evil is like, well, since I have been injected with the ability to know everything about the gate, because that's where I'm from, I will tell you everything about it and give you eternal life. But he's really screwing with him, and he's getting eternal life for himself, so he kills the king.
And this stuff is where, because Hope kept saying, like, well, the show's really, it's really comic booky. It really reminds you of traditional comic book storytelling, and I have to admit, this is where that really started to become obvious to me, because it felt like a Marvel story from, like, the 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, to me, the homunculus was like something out of, you know, a Robert E. Howard story from the 30s.
Oh, you think so?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, these things all influence each other, so...
Right. he's a ball of evil. Like, he is... I'm not trying to diminish him. It's just, this is the simple fact of his being... He is not a complex character. He is intended to be this unknowable bad force that is not human, because things that are human are good, and he is not, and he can never understand them. So that's why he's bad.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
And it's a little piece of whatever's beyond the gate,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
The gate of truth that exists. I don't know. It seems like in this show people visit it constantly, but...
It's like a revolving door.
Yeah.
Visited constantly. We just see it a lot because that's where Alphonse's body is wasting away.
Right. So we see it a lot there. You're absolutely.
We'll just refer to it as Margaritaville.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, so moving on, we get to this stuff, and one of the highlights of the show is in this stretch of episodes where Roy Mustang confronts Lust, and they have a big fight, and he basically burns her to death. And the animation in there is spectacular. It's a high point of the show. Really solid animation work. And I started feeling for the characters again. It reminded me of how I felt about these characters the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was an emotionally charged fight. It was sort of setting the stage for the fact that most of the rest of the show is just a series of protracted fights.
Mm-hmm.
But I really thought it worked really, really well. Like, that was definitely a highlight for me. was
That's a good episode, absolutely.
Was in there, and you know, at the time, admittedly, I was having a little trouble keeping all the story elements straight. I think it kind of gets unnecessarily convoluted, and I don't know if this is just because I was watching it in big chunks, and therefore it was harder to keep the story elements separate in my head. But it felt a little convoluted to me. I don't know, Mike. You watched it week to week.
It's much broader in scope, and that's part of why I enjoyed it so much, particularly as a follow-on to the original. I think what we're discovering here is that, at least in some respects, watching the 2003 version will help you gain an appreciation of the 2009 version. But you have to remember, the 2009 one, it wasn't just taking place in Central and East City and Reasonable. You know, there were the scenes in Briggs. There were the scenes all over the place, and there were about twice as many main characters.
Right, and I think that negatively impacts the story. Yeah. Actually, okay. I think by the end of the show, the Elrics are actually pretty marginal to what's happening.
I don't know. I was happy with that. I wanted more, and I got more. You know.
You think so? Okay. Well, that's great. That's interesting. I'm happy that you're here to talk to us about this, because obviously we're a little bit on the same page, and hearing from somebody who really appreciated this version. You know, I mean, you said there were not a whole lot of daylight between them for you, but you did prefer Brotherhood.
Yeah, just a shade. I mean, it's little things. It's the fact that Kimblee is a much more interesting character. He has a lot more to do. You know, you talk about the ball of evil, the homunculus being this, you know, pure bad guy. Kimblee is interesting because he's this completely, utterly amoral character who is either unleashing destruction or just passively watching.
I would say that, well, this is just getting into a discussion of characters. Do we want to, like, leave that off till later, or?
Why don't we run through the rest of the show real quick, the story here. We'll run through the segments, and then we can get to character.
Yeah, there's a lot more characterization of a bunch of the cast that I liked a lot, but we'll hit on that later.
So, well, speaking of characterization, there's a big revelation. This is a major change from the 2003 show that I thought didn't work. They changed the fact that Mustang killed Winry's parents in the Ishvalan Uprising. They changed that to Scar. So Scar did it this time. And I felt like that kind of ripped all of Roy Mustang's pathos away. Like, gone.
I mean, they could have substituted it with something. They don't.
But anyway, that's a big revelation. After that, we get into some other stuff that I thought was a real highlight, where they're fighting Envy in his true form inside, I think they're inside Gluttony.
They're in his belly.
They're in his belly.
Yeah.
All that stuff worked. I thought that worked really well.
Yeah, that's, shout outs to an animator named Hironori Tanaka. He was the guy who animated almost all of Envy's scenes where you saw more than just a limb. Okay. He's one of those guys that if you want a certain type of action scene, you call him.
All right. Well, we have the Sakuga opinion.
Right. Well, Brotherhood is a very Sakuga show. And
it is.
And 2003 is not. 2003 has like three super
2003 had, I mean, the lead animator on that was a guy named Yutaka Nakamura. And it's not surprising at all that we'd like what he does, because he was also one of the main guys on Cowboy Bebop and Wolf's Reign.
Yeah, it has a heavier, but there's not a whole lot of like showcase fluidity. It doesn't have showcase fluidity. It has, like, Greed fight in 2003 is great animation. Like, that's some of the best animation in the show. But it's, like, you know, just horrible breaking and gnashing and, like...
Bone-crunching stuff and, like, a real fight.
And Brotherhood's not like that. It's, like, rubber people, crazy monster anatomy, Fluid. Like, it's a completely different approach.
Yeah, and I think they both have their merits. I think they're both good. Like, I wouldn't complain about the way Brotherhood is animated at all. Mm-mm. I think most people would look at you like you're crazy if you did that.
Here's another diversion. Since you watched, did you watch both shows in Japanese?
I did.
Yeah, I have.
Did you happen to notice the cast changes?
Yep.
No.
I don't like New Roy. New Roy.
Oh, really?
Roy.
I prefer New Roy. I like Shinichiro.
No, I don't. Old Roy sounded older, and he had this, you know what? I don't think it's the, you know what? I'm going to stop there. I don't think it's the voice actor's fault. I think it was the characters they were given to work with. New Roy is not,
I don't think he's as interesting as old Roy.
I don't think maybe he was just not given enough to work with.
If the show had Deep Roy...
No, I don't know. I don't think any. I noticed the cast changes, but I don't think any of them like the show's not really an acting-y kind of show. I mean, like if interesting voice actors. I guess Envy is one of the most interesting just because of what the part calls for, but it's the same person, I think. They didn't recast Envy.
Right.
The biggest ones were Roy and Risa.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right, so the show then moves on to the single episode about Ishval, which was the cornerstone of the O3 show in terms of thematic depth and kind of bringing everything together was the Ishval stuff. In this show, it's an episode, and they basically run down what happened in that war or in that genocide and how everyone's hands are bloodied with that to an extent.
To point out the Ishbal episode, because talking about favorite points of the show or the manga story, I agree with Zach. I like the stuff starting from Barry the Chopper up through Maria Ross's flambe and then and Lest's death. All of that stuff, and then Havoc loses legs. That was one of my favorite parts. The stuff in Gluttony's stomach was one of my favorite parts. And then in the manga... those are two of my favorite things in both versions because they were done about the same in both versions. But in the manga, my favorite part of the whole thing was the Ishbal book, which is volume 15, and it's like five chapters of Ishbal. And they reduced it down to one episode that I think really sucks. And it's not even one whole episode. It's like half of one. It's 10 minutes out of one episode is Ishbal, and it just, they gutted it. They took, because the Ishbal book, because volume 15 is the most characterization and the most mood setting that the manga ever does, Brotherhood is all about economy, and they cut out anything that's not plot, plot, plot. Plot, action, plot, action. And it's like, what's all this mood and character? Rip. And they just completely ruined it. I hated what they did to Ishbal and Brotherhood.
They only really used Ishbal in Brotherhood as an example of Amestris's relentless expansionism.
Yeah, it was like, hey, let's cut out all the things that made this conflict matter to Risa or Mustang at all. And I guess we'll talk about this later. But the Brotherhood, the direction choices in that show just. Even if the material's good, even if the underlying writing is good, gosh, just the fucking direction choices.
If you're talking about changes to the plot, that's not the director, that's not Mr. EDA.
I'm not talking about changes to the plot. I'm talking about the framing, what they decided to spend time on, the pacing, the music use, all that stuff. I think sucks. The animation's
I preferred Irie's approach because I liked that it was less jokey. There was less of the weird comedy of, you know, fewer Ed is short jokes.
What? And, there's way more in Brotherhood.
I don't know, man.
There's way more. I just watched it. There's way more Eddie Short jokes in Brotherhood.
Well, something about it just wasn't rubbing me the wrong way, because I just felt like those moments were huge speed bumps in the original.
No, I thought there were huge speed bumps in Brotherhood. I thought they were way more noticeable.
Yeah, I don't like the humor. I think the comedy in Fullmetal Alchemist in general isn't funny, but...
Yeah. It's usually misplaced.
It's not good. Hiro Arakawa is just not a comedy person. And in Brotherhood, it was just unfunny speed bumps. And it's all the same comedy. It's overreacting, yelling, someone calls him short. That's it. And it's not funny, and there's a lot of it in both, and it doesn't work in either, I would say.
Yeah.
But anyway, so after the Ishbal stuff, which, again, I agree, like, that is one of the big things I loved so much about the 2003 show, we get to Briggs, which is, obviously, this is way past anything that's even touched on in the old show, and we're in full just manga material here, and... this is actually sort of the beginning of the end of the show, but it marks about the halfway point. So you have about 34 episodes left, and from here forward, it's just descent into the finale.
Fight, fight, fight.
It's fight, 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 all the way through all this material. They get through Briggs, they're a little worse for the wear. They introduce the concept of Al's soul not being permanently attached to the armor, so there's kind of a time limit on it, which I don't think was in the first show.
It was, but it was like a dread in the background, and it becomes negated by the last twist in the last couple episodes where Al becomes basically immortal negates it.
It was thrown aside, kind of like, and I'll say the original series, you know, just most of the other countries besides Ishval, like Drachma, where, you know, you actually get to see those people in the Briggs episodes, were kind of tossed aside in the original.
You get to see the anime Russians, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Anime Russians.
And, right. And, you know, Kreta to the west, I'm sure that's like, you know, Anna Mediterranean.
Yep. Now, there's a convention name. So they get through all this Briggs material. This is also where Kimblee starts playing a much bigger role in the story. I believe this is also, it's around this time or maybe earlier where Greed takes over Ling's body.
Yeah, that was quite a bit earlier, but he doesn't really do anything for a while.
But those two characters become extremely central to the story in the last third here.
Right.
And so that's, again, major difference.
Also, in this adaptation, Tim Marco is a much more important character.
Yeah, Tim Marco being the doctor who can cure people using Philosopher's Stones.
Mm-hmm.
And he did all the research on them, and he's got all this blood on his hands, but he just wants to be a good man. And, mm-hmm. He sticks around all the way through to the end.
Yep.
Normally, that character dies in a story like this, but he makes
it. Well, he did in 2003. He was like, here you go. Here's all my secrets. Godspeed. Well, lust stabs him.
Well, I mean, I know you talked about how badly damaged Scar was. For me, you know, Marco was part of what saved Scar as a character. He does this huge face turn, kind of takes the side of the good guys. I think it's Marco, Marco's influence that was causing that.
Some might call it an unrealistic jump in character.
Well, that happens at this one scene where I have to admit this thematically bugged me, where this happens in Briggs, where they capture Scar. There's another Ishvalan who's working inside with the Briggs soldiers under Armstrong's sister. And they have this conversation where Scar says, well, I'm trying to get revenge. I'm trying to turn the world into a better place. I want to convince these people that, you know, what they did was wrong. He's getting revenge. The Ishvalan guy says, well, I'm Ishvalan and I work inside the system and they accept me and I live up to their standards and teach them how to be a good minority and you're being a bad minority.
Mm-hmm.
And Scar basically says, yeah, you're right. You're a good guy. And me, I'm a bad guy.
I'm going to let go of all of my feelings of hate, justified feelings of hatred, and join with the people who murdered my entire nation.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it just like that.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And the girl whose parents I murdered is also going to forgive me. And it's okay, because we're all human, and the bad guy, he's like a monster. So, and we're all human. We can agree on that, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, it bugged me. But they also have that scene where Winry's, like, given the option of killing him at least twice.
Yeah.
And it starts losing its impact after a while.
It's like, she's not going to fight him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so obvious she's not going to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this show does repeat itself quite a lot with big reveals.
I will say, you know, since you mentioned Winry, I like her in this show better. I always thought that her joining the military in the first series was bullshit.
You know, I think I might agree with you on that. I think of all the characters, I think Winry she's stronger in this show. I think I agree with you on that. I think she was a little marginal in the first show. She plays a bigger role this time around. Has a lot more screen time, I think, and has more to do. And I think you're right. I think it's interesting. But, you know, the fact that they keep repeating that scene where it's like, oh, you've got a gun, you can kill him. Oh, but I can't. You know, they keep doing that. They also keep revealing that every time there's some atrocity and the secret of the Philosopher's Stone, it's always that they're doing some horrible thing with human beings.
That's right.
They have that reveal over and over and over again, and I stop gasping in disbelief after the third time it turns out to be genocide.
You're not meant to gasp in disbelief by the third time. It's the central conflict of the series. If you're going to make a Faustian bargain, you can't take Mephistopheles out of the equation.
Okay.
You know, characters try and try, and they can't do it.
The show takes a long time to build up to these moments. It is framed as though you are supposed to be shocked. It is framed as this, like, can you believe they're doing this? Yes, I can, because you've been showing them doing this in every other instance where there's a horrible secret.
Yeah.
The horrible secret is always they're using alchemy to do shitty stuff to humans. It's always that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it loses its impact at some point. Like, maybe it's not so much that I wasn't surprised, but seeing it over and over again, it loses its impact.
Mm-hmm. With, I guess that's my point. With the 2003 adaptation, they changed the focus. It's a smaller story. It's a more interpersonal character relationship story instead of the world is ending, and it's ending because of a giant evil monster. It's sort of a petty, like, it's a petty, sad, like, reveal of what the mastermind conflict is. The mastermind conflict is actually pretty, like, sad and pathetic. So the build to it is, like, the atrocities are smaller in scale. Everything's much smaller in scale. And there's a lot of weight put on just one person dying or one person being assaulted by soldiers or stuff like that. It's all that stuff is a big deal. With Brotherhood, it's like an entire country died in a single night, 12 episodes later. This country died in a single night, 12 episodes later. The scientists who orchestrated all of this have been, like, put into weird zombie doll bodies, and they're going to be an immortal army. Oh, no. And, you know, it's all this large-scale, nebulous, world-ending stuff. And it's sort of like, if that works for you, if you're like, yeah, this is like, in-depth, world-building, giant conflict that, you know, destroys
the planet. It's a great big adventure, you know? It's a Doc Savage story or an Indiana Jones movie writ large. It's, you know, it's an army of scientist zombies that are deployed and immediately murder the Council of Generals that runs the country.
Exactly. That kind of thing. So if that's more your bag, then that's what this show trades in. I kind of prefer the 2003 version where it is, it's sad because it's like just one person's life who you really care about will be put in danger, or a country, the country that the genocide is focused around in the old adaptation was one that we met at the very beginning of the show, and we watched them decline all the way up to the end. It's just the one country. I mean, it's two, but it's Ishbal is the past.
I think for me, there's a tonal whiplash. There's a tonal disconnect with this because on the one hand, you have the show obsessing over and over again over the death of this one minor character.
Yeah.
Again and again and again and again. But life is so cheap in the world of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. Mass numbers of people are dying constantly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, once that loses its impact, I wonder, you know, if all of these characters are ultimately expendable and they're constantly going through horrible body trauma and getting chopped up and sucked into bad guys and all this crazy shit is happening and people are dying en masse, I guess tonally it makes it hard for me to understand what the series' attitude is towards death and whether or not it's all that important, if that makes sense.
Oh, once again, I invoke Indiana Jones, Zach. Think about it, Zach. How many people did Indiana Jones murder in those movies?
Well, a lot, but at no point does the show ask me to seriously care about anybody except Indiana Jones and Marion. And that's it. That's it. That's those two characters. No one else. Maybe Marcus Brody, but he's not in it very much.
Sala.
So that's, I guess, my
Captain point. Katanga.
That monkey, you know, he sadly dies.
Poor monkey.
But, you know,
bad
dates. But, yeah, like, I guess that's, tonally, it's a little bit of a whiplash. There's a disconnect for me. Like, mm-hmm. I can't tell how seriously you want me to take anybody's death when there's so much death in this show.
And it's once again, I think it's another worldview divorce where it's what do you care more about, motives or actions? And that's not always something you can divide between two works. But in this case, it's very clearly something you can divide between two works, because in 2003, the motives behind the terrible, horrible genocide actually sound quite logical and quite, you know, like, oh, well, I understand where you're coming from. This is a trolley problem situation.
I wouldn't say they sound logical, but there's humanity to it. It's like you said, there's a pathetic undertone to it.
Well, yeah, I mean logical in a derogatory beep boop, not like a good way, but she comes up with a logical, the character there was Dante, just a normal human, a jilted lover of Hohenheim who happened to share all his knowledge and went a little power hungry with it. And when he left her and left her their son and everything else, she was like, okay, well, I'm going to make myself immortal and make myself the arbiter of civilization behind the scenes. And so that's what she continues to do, even though it means sacrificing everybody else's life except hers. Like, she's the only person that matters. But she comes up with a very logical explanation, quote-unquote, beep-boop logical, for this. Like, her motives seem to be in the right place, but they do not justify her actions. Brotherhood is way more concerned with your motive, with your motives are important regardless of what the action is. Specifically, it's bad that Mustang should not take revenge because revenge is bad for you. And Scar should not kill people because revenge is also bad for you. It's not even like, yeah, sure, maybe you have the right to take our lives. We did cause the genocide of your people. But, like, you shouldn't do that. It's bad. And there's a big thing with Edward being a pacifist. Like, he never takes lives. And that's reinforced as, yeah, you shouldn't take lives. That's important. You, regardless of the situation, you shouldn't take lives. And my problem with this was that in order to make all of this, well, what really matters is that you stay pure and you're a good guy and you can say to others that you're a good guy and you never did the wrong thing. In order for that to happen, they have to come up with some real forced contrivance in the plot. Like, there is always another way for Ed to get out of having to take a life. Like, there's always one that pops up. And it's like, but what if one didn't pop up? It seems awfully, like, unfair that the story is giving these obvious, like, outs that are usually not based in character motivation at all, so that he doesn't have to kill anybody. Only bad people kill people. And also, Mustang never has to commit human transmutation, because that would mean he's not a good person. Like, so they force him to.
If Mustang strays from the straight and narrow, let's not forget, Risa will shoot him. There's that, too.
Well, but it's not just that. It's the way it's characterized. Specifically, the way they get him to commit human transmutation is by removing that element, is by saying, if you don't commit human transmutation, Risa will die. The woman you love will die. And he still doesn't. And Risa's like, yeah, you did the right thing. And he's like, I know, I did the right thing. But they force him to against his will so that they can still have their big world-ending, they can still have the plot conflict that they need at the expense of character. And for me, like, that's the entire difference between these shows, is one of them is about plot, and it just grossly neglects, to me, grossly neglects character writing. Like, it has, I think Brotherhood has, in the manga, has bad character writing. Like, there's some stuff that's good, but mostly it's, like, comic booky tropes and really forced, ham-fisted, bad motivations. And then the other story is not as plot-focused, but it's really in-depth character writing. So that, to me, is the biggest divorce between the two versions.
Right. Well, anyway, so now we're into the end of the show, which gets into the final boss fight and some End of Evangelion-esque imagery.
Yes.
Where the dwarf in the flask basically has a body, and he looks like, you know, big, he looks like Mr. Game & Watch, but he's covered with Evangelion eyes.
Mouth looks like the Monster Hunter character.
Yeah.
He spent most of the series looking like Hohenheim because he likes Hohenheim and has been copying him.
Right.
I found that element interesting.
He's Mr. Game & Watch combined with evil Mike Wazowski.
Right. Well, at any rate, so then the show gets all kind of weird and cosmic. The bad guy, you know, evil incarnate, basically turns, you know, triggers this giant, he opens the planet's gate, and then another gate opens in the sky, and he refers to it as God, and he swallows God. So then he has God inside of him, and then they have to fight him while he has God inside of him.
Well, no, he doesn't. It aborts.
Oh, it aborts, right. So Shinji doesn't decide to save the planet then.
It was like he's still really powerful because he had a bunch of souls inside of him, but the actual God swallowing, he barfs it all back up because Hohenheim had...
Oh, right.
Hohenheim set up a counter circle ahead of time because he's like, I knew this was your plan the whole time. I prepared in advance. You never were going to accomplish your plan.
Well, I have a dinosaur that eats forest field dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Is the way... we didn't mean to both say that at the same time. It's just that was the reaction to when it actually happened on screen.
So. It gets really crazy towards the end there. I liked a lot of the imagery. I thought it was okay. The animation gets kind of nutty. But then they're just kind of fighting God mode father, who they kind of kill in a sort of a technicality, right? Greed, like he tries to absorb greed, and then greed basically says something to the effect of like, well, I'm not greedy anymore, peace, and leaves.
Peace. He sucks out, I don't even remember what it is. The result that matters is that of the bazillions of souls that he has in him that are giving him power, like, Greed's interaction with him, like, sucks most of those out, so he's sort of, like, down to level one. He loses all his levels, and now he's just, like, a porcelain skin covering the homunculus. And then
right.
Ed punches him in the face.
And
it's
Ed
like, crack, poink.
Yeah. And then Ed realizes that for some reason he can trade his gate, his personal gate, his ability to use alchemy for Al's body. Mm-hmm. I guess the truth, the thing that's inside waiting for him in this limbo where all these gates are, tells him, like, okay, you learned your lesson. Yeah, you can do that. And so
sure.
He gets Al's body back from beyond the grave, and they come back, and they're both fine. And Ed keeps his leg. He keeps his automail leg.
Yeah,
but he gets his arm back.
He only got his arm back because Alphonse sacrificed himself first. It's an echo of what happened in the 2003 version, so I'm not sure how much Arakawa took from that or was what she wanted to do all along, but it is similar in that Alphonse sacrifices himself first, Edward comes up with a better sacrifice, and they both get out of it good.
Right. And so the ending is everyone's happy in the most straightforward way you could possibly think of. Literally everyone gets exactly what they want, with the exception of the characters that are dead.
And bad.
And, you know, bad guys. But the final episode is just a wrap-up of... And they were all happy.
And they had babies.
Kids, and they had babies.
That looked just like them.
They had little babies. And, yeah, it's a sweet ending. But it's a super happy... It's like a Harry Potter ending. Yeah. And then they defeated the bad guy. And then they all got married and had babies. That's the ones you wanted to get married got married. You know, that...
You're right, guys. The better ending was the one where they went through the portal and they fought the Nazi blimps and the giant snake with Fritz Lang.
No, that's
what I think. No, not really. Ignoring the movie ending.
I am not necessarily comparing this to the 03 version.
Oh, I know.
I'm just saying that was the ending on this one, which was nice. I mean, after that...
It's an action movie ending. It absolutely is.
I was about to say that. You're right.
Yeah, I was going to say, you skipped a lot of my favorite parts of the series in your description here.
Well, then please... Well, that was what I was going to get to, was... This is a long show, so I was just trying to get through it.
Okay.
I would love to hear your, you know, in this show, what parts really spoke to you?
You know, I liked it as an action vehicle a lot. I liked the characters a lot. I loved how the Armstrongs were used. I liked that Alex, you know, went from a joke character in the first series to this kind of tragic figure who kind of went along with the war crimes in Ishval and is still haunted by that and ends up losing, the ascendancy of his house as a result because he can't bring himself to fight his sister for it. I like his sister Olivier, you know, the major general, because as soon as she sees an opportunity to confront the Fuhrer and get the bad guys derailed, she goes for it. The rest of the Council of Generals, you know, repeatedly come to her to try to bribe her to appeal to her vanity, and she just kills them left and right. That's great. I like the moment when King Bradley realizes that Mustang is leading a contingent that knows what he and the homunculi really are, and rather than try to get rid of them, he says, "Oh, well, you know, you're interesting. You're too valuable to me to just execute. So I'm going to take everyone you love, and I'm just going to put them in harm's way and let them sit there. And you have to kind of deal with that." Yeah. I like that maneuvering. I think the asshole little kid in this version of the story is much better than the asshole little kid from the 2003 series.
Which
your pride in this series versus wrath.
I disagree completely on that one.
Well, anyway, please go on.
In the home stretch, and you know, my favorite scene in the whole story is the Fuhrer, after a failed assassination attempt, arrives back in Central and just kind of tears through the Briggs Special Forces like paper. You know, I get that it's not a story moment, but it's one of those cinematic action scenes that, yeah, I live for stuff like that. It's fantastic.
Right. You know, there's a theme that's coming together here, and I think it's pretty obvious what the big difference is, and that is that as an action show, mm-hmm. as an action-adventure, straightforward action-adventure that isn't particularly concerned with what the original show was concerned with, Brotherhood functions really well, I think. The problem is that I think this is one of those cases where the thing I was exposed to first also happened to be the kind of story that I personally respond to stronger, like in a stronger fashion.
I mean, it sounds like the first one was a major formative experience for both of you. That wasn't the case with me. I was impressed by it, but I wasn't like it wasn't one of my favorite things I had ever seen.
I don't know that I would call it formative. I had been an anime fan for, you know, a long time at that point. I really liked it, and by virtue of my job, I had to write about it a lot. By the end of all that, I was fucking done with Fullmetal Alchemist. I didn't even want to think about it ever again. So, like, I wouldn't say it was formative, but that show, insofar as it is much more concerned with character writing, themes about humanity, themes about the things that we do, and the way it developed the characters with much more nuance because they had to stretch the material they had out over all these episodes, it deals with it with these characters in a much more nuanced fashion. They don't just state their motivations. They do it in the writing was just a lot stronger in terms of having characters with some thematic depth to them. Brotherhood is just a straightforward action show, and that's totally fine. It's just the Roy Mustang in that I liked so much as a character is a war criminal and is haunted by it and did something horrible to one of the main characters in the show that you also like and empathize with. Mm-hmm. And it creates this struggle in your brain where he's a good man, but he's also a monster who directly impacted one of these other characters in the show. Like, it's a much stronger bit of character writing to me, and I react to it much strongly. I don't think either of us are arguing at all that the 2003 show is somehow objectively better than Brotherhood. At all. It's just more in line with like what I would want out of a show. And
right, they have
at the time it felt really different for a shonen action show to be that concerned with character, thematic depth, philosophy, that kind of thing.
It's absolutely a much more thoughtful show. I'd give it that in a heartbeat.
And so that's why my reaction is, I think that basically sums up my reaction to Brotherhood, is this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of this novel that I read, you know?
Yeah, making the story a pure action vehicle, in your opinion, just kind of diminished it a little, huh?
Well, and all those changes to all the characters and the fact that in this version, the writing is extremely thuddingly straightforward. Everyone just states how they're feeling.
Oh, yeah, the dialogue is all like, this is my motivation, and these are my feelings, and I am a comic book archetype.
Yeah, you know, I was talking about this earlier, but I feel like the Show Tucker episode is all of my problems with Brotherhood in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. It's taking something that in the original was used to great thematic depth, really explored the ideas that character brought to the table, because the moral implications of alchemy are supposed to be the backbone, kind of thematic backbone of the whole show. Mm-hmm. And the original show used Show Tucker to show all kinds of nuances about what evil is and how it manifests itself. Mm-hmm. And this show, he shows up, he's a bad guy, he gets killed, on to the next fight. And I think that's totally fine. They're just extremely different approaches, and I prefer the former. Mm-hmm. Personally, I prefer that former approach.
Yeah, and for me, it's an issue of two things that bug me. I like the substance of the original show better than Brotherhood, but I also like the style more. I think Seiji Mizushima is a much better director than the guy who did Brotherhood. He's a super workmanlike director.
Idiot did Brotherhood.
Yeah. Super workmanlike, you know, good at his job, but like doesn't have like a Autori kind of voice, kind of like Mizushima does. And taking the Chow Tucker episode specifically as an example of that, like the 2003 version, when Ed finds out what Tucker has done, it is there's a burst of music, and then it's understated and it's trembly and it's really insidious and terrible, and then the music cuts out completely while Tucker very calmly explains, like bleeding down his face after he's been beat up a little bit, but very calmly explains why he did the things he did. It pans around the room and shows you all the disgusting stuff in the very basement level of his lab, kind of like Ed is seeing who he really is for the first time after he trusted him for such a long time. And just this calmly, like, explained to Ed, you understand, don't you? Like, you do these things because you can. It's part of being a scientist. You have to make sacrifices in order to progress the world around you. This is how it is. And it's creepy because you feel as betrayed as Ed does. In Brotherhood, the musical score of Brotherhood I don't really care for, but the way it's used is not great either. It's this blaring bom 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 bom, and then creepy like keyboard choral, like, oh, you know, kind of Gregorian chant choral noises. It's all just very in your face and evil, and Ed and Tucker are screaming at each other, and it does the cliche, like, they're reflected in his glasses because the glasses got punched off, and they're reflected in his glasses screaming at one another, and it's just, it doesn't have that depth of emotion, and it's a direction choice. It's not a thing of the original material. It's entirely a direction choice of the emotion here is be shocked, be grossed out, and then they move on from it. And it's just blatant. It's just hitting you in the head with the tragedy hammer while the other show was focusing on the deeper implications of the moment. And yeah, it's just like this is the aesthetic I greatly prefer over this other aesthetic. Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I watched some of the animation of the original series. I'm not sure that that's aged all that well. I mean,
maybe not. Yeah, it's been a long time for me.
Yeah, I mean, also the character designs, particularly in the promotional artwork, they have this weird shiny thing going on.
That was, you know, 2003 Digipaint was not a good time.
I think the Brotherhood looks nicer. If you're trying to separate animation and direction, they are two very different things. Brotherhood is better animated. The art style is the art style between the two. It's just a personal choice, and I personally kind of like 2003's better, but it is more consistent in Brotherhood. Like the consistency of keep it on model to this style in Brotherhood is spot on, whereas it gets a little bit more wonky donky back and forth in the 2003 version. So. Yeah, but animation and direction are two completely different things, and I think one is better than Brotherhood and one is better in the 2003 version. But
what did you guys think of Dante as the original central villain? Because, you know, part of why I like the newer one a bit better was because I just liked the final conflict that it was leading up to. I didn't find Dante that interesting of a villain.
Which is a very common sentiment. I hear that a lot, that a lot of people prefer Brotherhood because they thought Dante was a weak-ass villain. And
it's not so much that Dante is a weak villain. What I look at that 2003 version and think is just, I can't buy the idea that King Bradley would have gone along with her for that long. I don't know.
King Bradley is a different character in 2003. He is implied to have been changed. The homunculi have two. Oh, man, that's a huge difference between the two versions. The homunculi and Brotherhood are literally made out of. Okay, so Lust. Let's take Lust as an example. Lust in Brotherhood is made out of the pieces of Lust in the souls of. The Father is full of souls. He pulls out the souls that are filled with Lust, and he makes Lust out of them. She's literally
They're composites of lost souls, and in the original, they're made from dead people that were tried, that were products of human transmutation.
Yeah,
right?
Their names don't necessarily mean anything. They're named just to sort of an arbitrary. Dante is amusing herself, gives them these names, but they don't. They're not literally the embodiment of sins. Like they are pure evil constructs. Kind of that they can become good, apparently, in Brotherhood. I didn't think that was necessarily done all that well, but they can. But they're supposed to be pure evil, and they're definitely not human. In 2003, they are arguably human. They are reanimated Frankenstein monster humans that have been given the names of deadly sins in order to sort of dictate how Dante feels that they should act. And they, you know, they act on that, but they're complex characters. And so, to me, even if you don't really like Dante as a villain, which is understandable, she's sort of a pathetic, arrogant, woman-scorned, mad scientist. The homunculi are just as important villains, and they all have their own motivations independent of Dante. Like, Envy isn't just serving Dante because she's his master, and Lust is not. They all have their own personal, this is what I want. Wrath is the same way. Like, yeah, he works for Dante, but, like, he wants something of his own that's very specific to him. They all have their own motivations. They're all very important and very complex villains. Not the case with Brotherhood. They're minions of sorts.
They can't really oppose Father. I mean, in 2003, what Pride wanted was to be Führer, and he got to be Führer. And it always struck me as kind of odd that it's like, okay, well, you're Führer. She can't short circuit that. Why are you keeping her around?
Well, he wasn't explored that much. It was Pride in the 2003 version, the only characterization he gets, he doesn't get much in Brotherhood either, but the only characterization he gets is that he agreed with Dante's ideals before he was turned. He was ostensibly one of her lovers, And when he was turned, he was like, I wanted power and I've got it. So, you know, come at me, bitch. It's fine. Like, and it's not just I wanted power, but he also deeply believes in the ideals of some people are better than other people and need to be ruled by the better people. I'm one of the better people.
Yeah. He's objectivist.
Yeah. He's a... But he believes in God, which is weird. Mustang opposes him by saying, well, fuck you, there's no such thing as God, and there are no better people. You know, die.
Right. So, I mean, you know, I think it's fascinating. I'm sitting here trying to come up with an example of another show where it's remade. There's two versions of it, and they're such dramatically different takes on the same similar material. Like, here you have the same characters, basically the same narrative, and one is a... slower-paced character drama, and the other is a straightforward, rollicking action adventure.
I don't think it's slower-paced. As far as, I mean, the pacing is not very slow in that original show. It's just the stakes are smaller in things.
Okay, the point I was making is that I don't think I've seen a show. I can't think of another example.
Well, the closest I can think of is they're not nearly as divergent, but the two different versions of Hunter x Hunter.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The old MTV version versus the Madhouse one.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not quite the same, but But at the same time, like, I don't know anyone that swears by that earlier version. Everyone seems to love the new one.
I was going to say I've met people like that. They're out there.
Okay, yeah. So they exist.
They do exist. Yeah,
That's good.
Yeah, apparently the original Hunter x Hunter is quite a bit more lighthearted, even in the later story arcs, and the newer one, of course. Goes as dark as it possibly can as soon as it can.
Yeah, I saw a lot of the old Hunter x Hunter and none of the new one. And yeah, it was pretty lighthearted back then. So when people would tell me about stuff that happened in the new one, I'm like, that happens in Hunter x Hunter? This show is so...
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Right. Sure does.
Well, that's what happens when you take a series written for 13-year-old boys and girls... And those 13-year-old boys and girls grow up, and now they're 30, and they still want to read it. You know?
That happened with Yu Yu Hakusho, too. It's like, Togashi, he starts writing, like, oh, fun, spirit detectives, and then by the end he's gotten to, like, demon politics. And I love Yu Yu Hakusho, but that's what happened. I don't know much about Hunter x Hunter, but that show, like, went from light and then just got dark. I think he just does that.
So, honestly, the thing I'm taking away from this is not so much that I think, you know, for me personally, Brotherhood is, I'm glad I saw it, as with all of these. Any show that I see that's popular or well-regarded or talked about at all still that I haven't seen, I want to see it just to add to my knowledge and say I've experienced it. So I'm happy I watched it. But for me, obviously, it's the inferior version of this show. But it really boils down, I think, to more or less what you want out of a story. And there's two versions of this, and both of them fulfill their intended purpose pretty well. And so it's kind of cool to say, like, well, I kind of want to see Full Metal Alchemist. Which version should I watch? Mm-hmm. And you can just say, well, what do you like in a story? And there's one of those two versions that you can generally... recommend to them, and that's kind of cool.
That's what I've always done with that is because I do get that question sometimes. It's like, wait, which version's better? And I'm like, what do you prefer? And but I put that with a huge caveat of, even if Brotherhood is the version you're more likely to watch, just hold your nose to the first 13 episodes, because I think they're indisputably terrible.
Okay.
After that, it's fine. Answer, but oh man,
my answer to that question is watch both, man. You know, watch the 2003 one first. And then watch the second, because I think they're both really entertaining shows, and I think it's a very interesting exercise just to contrast the two.
I would say that if you are going to watch both, like if your intention is, okay, let's watch both, then do the 2003 one first, because the first 13 episodes of that next one maybe will be less painful, because you know that they're just rushing through this stuff.
Yeah, they're cannonballing through it, and that approach will make a little more sense if you see the 2003 one first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I stand by what I said originally, that I really think Brotherhood would have benefited by completely ignoring the existence of the original show. Mm. I think it would have maybe been a stronger show overall if those first 13 hadn't been so rushed. Like, I appreciate that they were trying to accommodate the fact that we just made this show, but... I think it would have been stronger and like a more like standalone product for the test of time. Mm-hmm. Because people will still be talking about Fullmetal Alchemist 5, 10 years from now, I'm sure. It impacted anime fandom very heavily. It's a lifetime show, like a Cowboy Bebop or, a Death Note or something like that. So I think people will still be talking about it. And if Brotherhood was going to be the definitive version, then I think, you know, taking its time early on would have been a boon. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm walking away from this with, is like, well, there's two versions. Which one you prefer is, you know, they're both good at what they're attempting to do. I just happen to very strongly prefer one over the other. It sounds like, Mike, there's not a lot of daylight for you, but one's a little bit better than the other.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Roy as this such a complex character. That never really grabbed me when I was rushing through that first series.
Well, not super complex. I just thought.
The idea that, oh, well, you know, he's trying to be a good man, but he's also a war criminal. That never really occurred to me as something worth dwelling on. It was just like, oh, okay, well, let's keep going.
Yeah, well, he's an alcoholic, miserable fuck in the first show. Like, he's right. He's tortured.
They have a really great scene where. This is in the episode where Mace Hughes dies. This is the very beginning of it, where he's coming to visit him, and he's like, well, he's been a recluse for a while, but I'm going to bring him some food and check in on him. And he opens the door for him, and he walks in, and Mustang is attempting to commit human transmutation when he stopped in on him. And he's like, this is really fun. It's forbidden. Like, it's kind of naughty, don't you think? And like, he's obviously just extremely drunk. And Hughes says, if you just want to die, there's easier ways to do that. You have a sidearm. And he said, I couldn't pull the trigger. I've used that weapon to kill so many other people. I wanted to die trying to make up for something. And it's like, my heart. Like, there's no exchange like that in the Brotherhood.
Yeah, I think that sort of sums up the chief difference in the writing.
I haven't seen it in years. Just describing it makes me want to cry. It's, you know,
And since we're setting up these contrasts, and I know that this is going to come up in the question, so let's short circuit that now. What do you guys think of Risa Hawkeye in the original versus the newer one?
She's a basic character. I think that their relationship is more equivalent and more loving in the 2003. I don't think she's ever given much depth, but she is given more of a equal position to him in the 2003 version. Like,
agreed.
And in Brotherhood, she's just sort of always his underling.
Yeah, I mean, I hear a lot of discussion, well, you know, which one is better to her? Which one makes her a stronger character? That was one thing that did disappoint me about Brotherhood and finding out about more of her background, is that she was kind of always defined by the men in her life, first by her dad and then by Roy.
Yeah, she is. She's kind of an object. Nobody wants to hear that. I'm sorry. She's an object with a gun on the end. Sorry.
I like that in the original series in 2003. She is this kind of unknowable character. You never really learn that much about her.
Yeah, I did not appreciate the thematic implications of the tattoo on my back gave you your flame powers. I just it tilted it in the direction that Hope was talking about and that you were talking about.
All
that
of her depth.
She's there. Her entire character is there as an accessory to Roy Mustang.
All of her depth in the Brotherhood version is in Ishbal. Like, every last bit of it. And they took all the Ishbal stuff out. But her most of her depth is divorced from being an object for dudes is in the idea that she is somehow less culpable in the war because her weapon she's a sniper. Because as a sniper, she does not directly connect with the people that she kills in the kind of ways that melee alchemists do. And that weighs heavily on her in terms of guilt. But it's never brought up again. It's just in that Ishbal thing. But they cut that out because it's not part of the plot. So, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Before we get to the Twitter questions, there's one thing that really bugged me about the very end of the show. There's a big plot thing that I was like, what the fuck? So Roy Mustang loses his eyesight as a result of him attempting human transmutation. They make a big point of the fact that the Philosopher's Stone cannot give you back what you lost in your attempted human transmutation. At the very end of the show, he's blind in a hospital bed, and Marco comes in with a Philosopher's Stone and says, I still have one of these. You want to use it to get your eyesight back? And he says, well, give Havoc his legs back first. He's not supposed to be able to get his eyesight back with that thing.
Yeah,
so
it's a
what
butthole.
The hell?
It's
I don't even remember that detail. I just assumed that Marco was using, what's it called, Renton Jutsu, you know, Alkahestry.
Oh, maybe that's
the good alchemy.
The good alchemy, yeah. Maybe. If there's an explanation for that, but that was like one of the last pages of the manga. And when reading the manga, I was like, hey, actually it's worse in the manga. In Brotherhood, they changed it. Originally in the manga, he says, I've got this Philosopher's Stone. You want your eyesight back? And he's like, yeah. And then on the last page, in a huge collage of other characters, you see Havoc still lame, still going
in his wheelchair.
Yeah, still going through kind of slow rehabilitation. Havoc is never brought up. So in Brotherhood, they had the foresight to go, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. That's not what he would do. He would go, oh, use that on Havoc. Then you can use it on me. But it shouldn't work on you, Mustang. That's a plot hole.
Maybe he's using the other alchemy. I don't know. But it bugged me. And it thematically kind of went against everything the show had been building up to, which is don't use these Philosopher's Stones. They're horrible.
I'll admit, yeah, that him getting his sight back kind of weirded me out, too. Just because of the whole, just like, wait a minute. You know, he gave that up deliberately. He knew there would be consequences.
Well, he didn't give it up on purpose. It was taken away from him. They took that choice.
It was the thing he lost, I
think they compelled him,
also,
yeah.
Also, I, just on a pure gore and viscera and commit to your concept, damn it, perspective, I was really disappointed that Mustang loses his sight in some sort of vague way where it's just like, I don't know, was the part of his neurons that connect his eyes to his brain, was that removed by the gate in some non-gory way? Because that's not what they do for literally everyone else. Everyone else, they rip limbs off, rip intestines out. For him, he just lost his sight. Oh. It was like, pull out his eyes. I don't care if he's not going to be pretty, Arakawa. Pull out his eyeballs.
Yeah, it was my impression that his corneas were removed. So he had his eyes, but they didn't work no more.
Yeah, it was like, and I know entirely why that was done. It was because it would be distracting and he wouldn't be pretty, but come on, you know, eh. Yeah.
I agree, that would have been great. They had made him, you know, just eyeless, yeah. Sorry, your pretty boy's ruined.
Yep.
You're going to have to rewrite all those doujinshi.
Well, it makes the doujinshi, you know, it gives him two more holes, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to some Twitter questions here. Composer Rose asks, which version do you think has or will have more staying power among anime fans, and why? I would say, I think Brotherhood is the version that teenagers are going to see. I think that's the one that repeats on Adult Swim, so that's going to get more exposure over time. I think the 2003 show will hang around in the consciousness as a result of being related to that show, but Brotherhood will be the version that people are largely exposed to first, and thus will be the version that moving forward most anime fans you meet, if they've seen it, they've seen Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even now, look at the critical aggregates you can find out there, look at the stats and the big portal sites. Like, if you go to IMDb, more people have seen and rated Brotherhood that report on that site than the earlier series. So yeah, it's tilting towards the newer one.
Yeah, Brotherhood is also the one that's in our ANN user rated top 10.
Well, I did notice that in the ANN one, though, the people who rated Brotherhood, they rated it higher, but it's a much smaller sample size.
Right.
So
that's the answer, basically, is that more people have presently seen the older show, but, like, new people, it's one of those things that's hard to predict, because it's, like, giant ball that was made several years ago versus slowly growing ball that is growing much more slowly, but is actually growing while the other one's in stasis. It's sort of weird.
All right. Invalid Name asks, as remakes go, what could or should Sailor Moon Crystal have learned from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood? Mike, do you have an answer to that one?
I think the biggest flaw with Crystal is you know, largely visual. I think they do fine with trying to adapt Takeuchi's manga narratively. It's not that deep anyway, but the sete, the character designs, are incredibly difficult to animate and make look good. Yeah. And I think that's just killing the show.
Yeah, if that's
like the character designs are very pretty, but you can't animate them.
Yeah, if that show were really pretty, I bet you'd have way less complaining and higher ratings, and it would be doing much better now if it were super pretty.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a statement about anybody who's a big fan of the show being shallow or anything like that. I just think like the story elements can be overlooked or at least forgiven if the show is really, really pretty and really well animated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And and the other thing that they would have to do is, you know, Bones, even to this day, never have more than two or three irons in the fire. And this season, Toei, you know, they produced, what, like 9 or 10 different things?
Yeah.
They spread themselves way too thin.
Yeah, yeah. You want to want an example of how thin they're spreading themselves? Watch World Trigger.
Ooh.
Rather not.
Or don't.
I'm a fan of the manga.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone says the manga's good, and no one's watching the show.
No.
All right. Also from Invalid Name, FMA Geography has obvious real-world counterparts. Rizumbul is Hokkaido. Shing is China. Ishval is the Middle East. Do you think that helps or hurts the show? I don't, you know. Aside from the misinterpretation I was talking about before, I don't think it really... I mean, look, Arakawa took the Ishval stuff and ran with it as an Iraq war metaphor, and that had a lot to do with the 2003 show feeling particularly prescient.
You mean Aikawa.
Aikawa, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Their names are similar, Arakawa. Yeah.
Aikawa. you know his name. Anyway. He took that and ran with it. I think it meant more in that show than in Brotherhood. They're just fantasy names of fantasy places that happen to have similarities.
Yeah, it's like, let me base this off of... My favorite one is Xerxes is clearly ancient Greece, and they named it Xerxes. And it's like...
Yeah. Oops. But no, you know, the geographical analogs, come on. All kinds of adventure and fantasy stories do that. Game of Thrones does that.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's any, like, it's any hindrance to the show at all. It's just sort of a quirk, you know. It exists.
Yeah. All right. Jen Kunoichi 351 asks, and we got a lot of people asking about this because apparently this is a big argument on the internet. Which version is more feminist?
That's kind of what I was touching on with Hawkeye.
Yeah, you know? Right. But I guess to directly answer the question, I don't think Fullmetal Alchemist holds up or is necessarily all that particular a show that you want to apply the feminist theory criticism to. I think it just, like, all the female characters are, you know, capital letters, strong female characters, trademark.
Well, not in the 2003 version. I don't mean that as a superiority thing. I think the answer to that question is apply feminist theory to other things, maybe, because this show is so unconcerned with women characters. Like, they matter.
And not as, like, a demeaning thing.
No.
It's just they're not...
They're not central to the story. The story is mostly about dudes. The women that matter, it's interesting. It's another huge divide in, like, worldview. The women that matter in the 2003 version are kind of slotted into archetypes that betray, like, a sadness, like a betrayed women, women left behind, women who are helpless, but not in a I need help because I'm a woman, but people that are, they're very human, they're very I am made completely basically completely impotent by the situation that I've been put in. Like, Winry is not helpless because she's a woman. She's helpless because she just can't do anything in the situation where these huge superpowers are at war. Rose is helpless because she is a victim of war and being used as a totem for other people to rally to war, etc. Dante is, you know, a woman scorned archetype, etc. But none of it's really sexist. It's just none of it's feminist either. And in Brotherhood, you have a bunch of super kick-ass women, but they're all, like, shallow as a dull pond, and all of their super kick-assness is like, I'm a cool mom, I'm a tough mom, I'm a kick-ass girlfriend, and it's all like, girl, 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 woman, 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 power, 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 and it's like, both of these are super shallow things, and if you want to talk about complex female characters, look at another property. Like, they just don't matter that much.
I think the closest Arakawa got with you know, following through was, I really felt like at the end of Brotherhood, the new Führer was going to be Olivier, and then she didn't.
Yeah, well, they don't do a dictatorship. Like, they replace it with a new government.
Well, this is the important question. Penguin Truth asks, Romy Pacu or Vic Mignogna?
I'm going to disappoint a lot of people and say that I've never really watched this show dubbed. I watched a couple of episodes of 2003. I just didn't like the delivery, didn't like some of the casting choices. I switched to Japanese, and I just loved Romy Park and Rie Kugumiya as the main characters. Something about their chemistry really appealed to me, and I've stuck to the show in Japanese since then.
I agree with you.
I don't have a preference. I mean, Vic Mignogna-ness aside, I think that Ed is not a terribly difficult character to play, and they both clearly really care about it and play the character to the letter. I don't think there's a big difference either way. I like both of them. I think they both do a good job.
All right. I like this question, and I can't read his Twitter name, so Confused Kaneth asks, How do you think a hybrid of the two series, basically FMI 03 with a conclusion similar to Brotherhood's, would fare? Well, you know what?
If you have a conclusion similar to Brotherhood, there's a show for you. It's called Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I would be curious to see the 2000, the style, the attitude, the tone of the 03 show and the writing applied to the greater story, the Brotherhood story.
Right.
But if you remake Full Metal Alchemist again, I'm not going to watch it.
So, yeah, it's no more.
I don't need to sit through those plot points ever again.
I don't think we need another one of these.
No. God, I hope not.
I don't really want the... I mean, I acknowledge that it's a pro, that it's a plus for people who like that stuff, but I don't really want the world-ending conflict of Brotherhood. It's just not what I prefer. I like the smaller story.
Here's another question about 2003. So do you guys completely just discount the Shyamalan movie?
I don't think about it.
It doesn't matter. It's like a nice... It's like a cherry on top of the sundae I got. It's like, well... I just eat the cherry and I don't even think about it, and then I eat the sundae. Like, it doesn't really hurt the show retroactively. It has a really stupid, crappy villain, and it obviously didn't need to exist because this show's conclusion is so good the way it is, but it doesn't actively hurt anything. It's not a bad movie. It has really cool, some really cool Sakuga in it, so there you go.
From what I read in the production diaries, that was originally going to be the TV ending, and then they realized that they could make a movie.
Yeah.
They had to add the villain, though. Like, the villain is the worst part.
I didn't dislike it. Honestly, my memory of it is very faded, and I didn't sit through Sacred Star of Milos again for this.
Right.
So, Sacred Star of Milos, people try to pair it up with Brotherhood. It's kind of its own thing, you know?
Yeah.
It dovetails with the continuity of either. It's one of those Shonen Jump type movies where doesn't break any continuity.
Crazy animation in that one, though.
Oh, I love it. I love the animation in that. It's great. Yeah.
I mean, the nicest thing about Shyamalan is that Wrath goes home, and he gets a really cool fight scene with a lot of great Sakuga, and then he goes home. So if you like Wrath, and I really liked Wrath, like, there's your happy ending.
Okay, Zucchini Puffs asks, can you think of any other series that might get a second adaptation like Brotherhood did? Are there any that should? If Trigun Badlands Rumble had not flopped, they would have gone ahead with a Trigun Maximum TV show.
That would have been a cool show.
And do that whole manga. Same with Berserk, but they tried with those movies. I have no idea if they're planning on making more.
Berserk was going to be the pick I wanted to see, if they could take it up after the eclipse.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have these situations all the time where, you know, they adapt a popular manga and they catch up too quick and they take it in a different direction. So you could go back and revisit Soul Eater. You could do it with Blue Exorcist. You could do it with Claymore. But yeah, my pick would be Berserk. But you're right, Zach. I don't think they will, because those movies were kind of a sad little fart.
Yeah, and you know what? If they did a TV show, it's like, well, we got to do Eclipse again. No.
Just start after the eclipse.
Yeah. Just please.
Damn.
We don't need to see the eclipse again. God.
If they rebooted Trigun, they wouldn't have to worry about the Brotherhood problem of, oh, this is where the overlap is, because there's, like, no overlap. The manga is just completely different from the beginning.
Are they ever going to take another crack at Sailor Moon? Maybe. But, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of, like, half-assed, half-finished manga adaptations of manga that eventually did finish.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's an interesting question, I guess, for the audience. Like, you know, in the comments, let us know some of the series that you would like to see that got an anime adaptation that you feel a little lackluster and you would like to see them adapted again. Let us know. Groovin asks, at what point in Brotherhood should an original watcher of Fullmetal Alchemist tune in without getting confused? You have to watch the entire thing.
Yep.
Can't do it.
I was going to say, it's like, you know, you could kind of get away with skipping some of those first 13 episodes, but dude, don't.
Yeah, even ignoring the plot. Even if the plot elements are the same, the underlying perspective and worldview and tone is just completely different from the get-go.
Aaron Sarais asks, do you think FMA would have been as popular had Brotherhood come out first? I think so. I think it would have had relatively the same impact.
Mm-hmm.
Just wouldn't have responded to it the way I did.
Yeah.
Tonally, they're different, but aesthetically, they're not so different. I think the time was right in general. You could have had either of them debut in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
You would have had the same result.
I think it would have had the same art style as 2003, but if they did the manga, like, if they did it, like, with filler waiting for the rest of the manga to catch up, I think it would have been just as popular, yeah.
God, can you imagine a filler arc for that show?
I can.
Actually, yeah, I can too, now that I come to think of it. Kind of want to see that.
No, thank you.
You don't want to see Alexander Armstrong get his driver's license?
Okay, well, yes, but that's not what it would be, so...
Yeah,
if it was, I then I would... Like, we had that. We had the... it wasn't even a filler arc. We had the episode where Havoc has to go date Armstrong's sister because they're using him to pass counterintelligence along, so...
Well, I mean, also, like, the whole... I don't know about you guys, but, like, the whole subplot with the Tringham brothers and their dad, like, that just did nothing for me at all.
It's literally two episodes.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's filler, yeah.
I don't remember it. That's how much of an impact it had on me.
This comes up a lot, actually. People say Brotherhood is better because it has no filler. I disagree with that. I think the 2003 series does everything it wants to do, and then it has room for extras. And if you don't like the extras, you can ignore them, but they don't derail or affect the overall plot in any negative way. They're just extra. Like, I hate the Phantom Thief episode. I think it's terrible. But it's just extra. It doesn't hurt the actual plot. And the actual plot is solid, so it's just like you're getting bonuses, you know?
Brotherhood had big chunks, especially in Briggs and afterward in the last third of the show, where it's just... It felt like filler. Because
it's not
just
really
fight.
It's protraction, but yeah.
Because it's fight after fight, and at that point, I just wanted them to get to the point.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need to watch them fight Gluttony again. Could you just take him out and get to the fucking main bad guy, like the final boss already? Like, too much. It was too much. It felt like filler. I understand it wasn't, but it felt like it was.
Right.
Josh Dunham asks, doesn't seem like the massive popularity of FMA is carried into Hiromu Aokawa's other works. Why is that? Well, her other works are not as accessible, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I've only read a little bit of Silver Spoon. I haven't seen the anime adaptation, but that strikes me as a very different kind of story.
Well, that's for a very specific audience, too, and it doesn't, like, Fullmetal Alchemist is big, broad, mass appeal, Shonen Jump audience stuff.
I will say, have either of you guys read her Heroic Legend of Arslan manga?
I flipped through it. It's on
Crunchyroll, and that's quite good. I think the TV anime of that that's coming out in the spring, that's going to be popular. Watch for that. But that's as much Yoshiki Tanaka's as it is hers.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can only, I have to admit, like, you know, watching that OVA, which I did, you know, the old OVA, the appeal of it was the Amano designs. Mm-hmm. The story felt like kind of rote.
I mean, the first one was quite good, and then it rapidly went downhill.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But the story didn't necessarily grab me. It was the Amano stuff.
Yeah.
And admittedly, I find Arakawa's illustration style to be too bland for my taste. I find it to be very bland. I'm not a huge fan of her design sense. So, you know, I'm not necessarily looking forward to that story with an aesthetic that I find dull. I think her stuff is just very workmanlike. Like, it's not bad. It's just kind of bland.
I'm always okay with her design sense as a, like, low, it's like, if Fullmetal Alchemist is fantasy sci-fi, this is like low fantasy sci-fi and it's earthy and stuff like that. Until I saw Father, and I think Father is just a bad character design. I don't like it. I think it looks really... It looks cheesy. It looks lame. It looks like a rubber monster in a 50s horror movie. And it makes me laugh. It's not scary. It's not scary at all.
The thing is, that's why I think her manga of Arslan works. Because Arslan is low fantasy. One of the things I like about it is it's kind of this fantasy retelling of history. But there's not that... At least in the early going, there's not really that much magic at all.
It's kind of Vinland Saga-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. I want to see that whole story because that you know, Arslan is like a giant thing in Japan. Like,
yeah,
it's very, very popular, and I'm curious to see what where that story goes. So I definitely want to see more of it. So yeah, I'll keep an eye out for it. You know, it probably will be fairly popular. All right. Timo Morisimo asks, and I guess we'll wrap with this question. Who would win in a fight? 2003 Ed, Brotherhood Ed, Ed Helms, Ed Helms, or Ed Wood?
I think the Sacred Star of Milos, Ed, would mop the floor with all of them. Little dude is scary in that movie.
Yeah, that's true. My vote still goes to Ed Wood.
Right.
He'd drink them all under the table.
Yeah. He'd show him his false teeth, and they'd just run for the hills.
Yeah. Do you have an opinion on this, Hope?
No,
you don't.
Edwin.
Edwin.
Well, I sure hope this alchemy isn't going to do anything bad.
Nicely
exactly.
done.
All right. Okay, I guess that wraps us up. Mike, thanks for coming on and talking about this show with us for so long. It was fantastic to have somebody with that perspective, and I find your comments to be very insightful, and it helped me understand the show better than I think I did before. So thank you.
It's given me kind of a yen to revisit that first one. I think I might be doing that at some point soon.
Cool. All right, Mike. Well, I'm sure we'll see you back on the show soon for another Super Nerds episode, but thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Mike for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you all next week.